Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, often imitated, but never duplicated. Let's get to the docket. First, new information on the Sam Olson matter. Second, the Murdaugh case in South Carolina gets more and more interesting. Third, the South Dakota Attorney General tries to create some reasonable doubt. A maid tips off police officers in Denver. Did she help prevent something big? Cosby wants to sue. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. I want to thank everyone for the birthday well wishes that they left me in the comments section. Thank you. It was a good birthday. My daughter surprised me coming up from Texas, where she resides. She was in coordination with the lovely Miss Kristen, who, of course, brought in my favorite meal. The meal consisted of stone crab claws and king crab legs, all shipped in that same day. It was absolutely delicious. Oh, and you can't forget the key lime pie. So it was a pretty good birthday all around. So thanks everyone for all the nice words. All right, before we get started today, we have a sponsor for today's show. It's Policy Genius. Policy Genius can help you out and save money. Who doesn't like to save money? Everybody likes to save money. Let them help you. Policy Genius is supporting Crime Talk, so let's support Policy Genius. Policy Genius is on a mission to get insurance right. Since 2014, we've helped over 30 million people shop for life insurance, and we've placed $45 billion in coverage. If someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all on one site. You can save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. You can save $1,300 or more per year on life insurance by using Policy Genius to compare policies. The licensed experts at Policy Genius work for you, not the insurance companies, so you can trust them to help you navigate every step of the shopping and buying process. Getting started is easy. First, head to policygenius.com/crimetalk. Then compare personalized quotes. Find the best policy and price for you, and the Policy Genius team will handle the paperwork and scheduling for free. Click the link in the video description to get started. All right, let's get straight to the docket. New information in the case regarding the death of Sam Olson. Remember, he's the 5-year-old that went missing. And it turns out the girlfriend of the father of Sam Olson, a woman by the name of Teresa Balboa, she was originally arrested. Well, now she has charges relating to the death of Samuel Olson. And the prosecutor apparently has information that kind of corroborates their theory. Why is that important? Prosecutors always like to be able to corroborate what they're saying in court, not just by one witness, but what other witness or scientific evidence can corroborate what they're saying. Well, Benjamin Rivera, he is the guy that helped Miss Balboa try and cover up the death of Sam Olson. He's basically cooperating with them, and the words that are going to not help the attorney in her case, trying to defend her, were, quote, "I think I've killed them." After that was done, Miss Balboa then asked Benjamin Rivera to go to the store and purchase duct tape and the large container from Walmart. Now, Obviously, those are not great words the defense attorney is going to want to hear, but it may lead to a conviction, no doubt. Now, Benjamin Rivera, as I stated, was cooperating. He's out on a $100,000 bond in this particular case. Clearly an accessory after the fact, along with another co-defendant in this case. The other co-defendant in this case is a gentleman by the name of Dylan Walker, who picked her up at the Walmart in Cleveland, Texas, according to authorities. Walker and Balboa then allegedly went to the storage unit in Webster, Texas, where they took the storage container to the Best Western in Jasper, Texas, where ultimately the remains of young Sam Olson were recovered. You may also recall Ms. Balboa tried to say that the biological mother and a police officer showed up at the residence asking for the child, and turns out that was completely false. So that shows some consciousness of guilt. Now, obviously, we'll give Ms. Balboa the presumption of innocence, but let's be realistic. It's not looking good for her when they have the remains, they have admissions, and they have two co-defendants who I'm sure are going to be more than happy to testify against her in exchange for a reduced sentence on their part. We've said it once, we'll say it again. The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. I somehow think Ms. Balboa is on her own from here on out. Next on the docket, remember the Murdaugh case? Remember when Paul Murdaugh and his mother, Maggie, were found deceased on their hunting lodge property, both the victims of gunshots? And a lot has transpired. Where do we begin? Let's first start with the case that kind of brought Paul Murdaugh to the forefront. That was the death of Mallory Beach, when it's alleged that several teenagers, along with Paul Murdaugh, were on a boat. Paul Murdaugh was intoxicated, allegedly. And at that particular time in the evening, it was dark. They stopped at another liquor store and a bar to get more alcohol. They went back on the boat and ultimately hit a bridge, throwing Mallory Beach from the boat, and her body was found about a week later. Well, it turns out that one of the young men on the boat, a guy by the name of Connor Cook, he was one of six people on the boat when it crashed and hit the bridge and throwing Mallory Beach from it. Well, Mr. Cook, through his attorneys, believed that some evidence at the boat crash scene is missing, and his lawyers want to question officers about failing to conduct an appropriate investigation. Now, why is this so significant? Well, there's been lots of civil litigation going on in regards to this matter, but Mr. Cook and his attorneys believe that law enforcement officers were basically trying to frame or put him behind the wheel of the boat, potentially exposing him to criminal liability as it related to the death of Mallory Beach. Now, this Rule 27 petition is filed kind of pre-litigation, as I understand the rules in South Carolina, and it allows you to question people kind of to get some necessary information so litigation can actually begin. And in this particular case, the lawyers for Mr. Cook are alleging a civil conspiracy regarding the investigation of the crash. Now, the Murdaugh family is apparently very well connected, and you would think this is only the kind of thing that you see in movies where the powerful families get breaks from law enforcement and maybe even try to say that somebody else would be responsible. Well, it's kind of looking like that's what goes on here in South Carolina. Never my experience when I lived down there, but I was not in the private sector. I was in the Marine Corps at the time, so I didn't get to see exactly how things went. Now, the court has not decided whether they're going to allow the attorneys for Mr. Cook to depose these officers and try to explain why certain evidence wasn't taken, why, for example, a blood alcohol test was never given to Mr. Paul Murdaugh. you know, those types of things that can really harm a case if things weren't done properly. And so only seems fair that people are trying to figure things out. Now, it's alleged that the Murdaugh family has a lot of power and influence down there in South Carolina because members of the family have served as the county elected prosecutors for almost 87 years. Now, there's currently no Murdaugh currently in office as we speak, but 87 years is a long time to make a lot of friends. By all accounts, the vote was going rather slow right before it hit the bridge. Literally, they were going no more than a couple miles per hour when Paul Murdaugh hit the throttle and the boat literally stood up and then shortly thereafter hit the bridge. People on board stated that Paul Murdaugh was basically making a fool of himself and basically got angry right before the boat hit the bridge. Now, this is a complete side note. Paul Murdaugh's ex-girlfriend, Morgan Doughty, also said that he was an angry drunk. And other interesting news in the Murdaugh matter is that we told you that when the police were looking into clues, things of evidentiary value relating to the death of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh, that they towed away a vehicle. And they also stated that they were opening the investigation. And the police also stated that they were reopening the investigation of a 2015 case. It was believed to be a hit and run of a young man by the name of Stephen Smith. And he was found dead with a head injury on a rural road in Hampton County. That's in South Carolina. His death was originally investigated by the South Carolina Department of Public Safety, but was basically never solved. Now, as we stated, 3 weeks after the homicide of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh, members of this prominent family, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, known as SLED, announced it was opening a separate investigation into Smith's death based upon information gathered during the course of the Murdaugh double murder investigation. They didn't elaborate. The SLED didn't elaborate as to what they found, which led to their agency to open up this new investigation. As we stated, the original investigation was done by the South Carolina Highway Patrol. And they said that the 19-year-old's death referenced a hit and run, but notes obtained from the police file reveal that the troopers found no evidence to support that idea whatsoever. They saw no vehicle debris, skid marks, or injuries consistent with someone being struck by a vehicle. Now, through a Freedom of Information Act release, documents and audio interviews have been obtained. And people familiar with the victim and the case, they were all interviewed. And the consensus within the community seemed to be that the freak hit and run was not a valid explanation for Mr. Stephen Smith's death. One of the recordings actually has an investigator on tape saying, I know that we've gone back and forth and there were different rumors about him possibly getting hit by a car. He didn't get hit by a car. That was actually said by one of the investigators in the case.
And then we kind of went back and forth and there were different rumors and about it, you know, him possibly getting hit by a car and this and that. He didn't get hit by no car.
The interviews reveal a complicated web of rumors, none of which could be fully proven or disproven by anybody in the community or family or friends. But the case notes within the file of the documents released that within a month of Smith's death, investigators began receiving tips linking him to Buster Murdaugh, the son and brother of the two Murdaughs shot and killed in June. Documents of the interviews that were released stated by people that they didn't know who did it, but they heard that Buster did it. Numerous people said that Buster did it. And everybody knows who Buster is and like his family, and that's also, it's kind of shocking. Numerous people said that Buster did it. Buster referring to Buster Murdaugh. Now, obviously, these are what people were claiming. It was speculation and innuendo as no one had first-hand knowledge that they could articulate to the police, which obviously would have resulted in a warrant if that had been the case. Now, as we talked about, these were a real big, powerful family in this particular area. But listen to this investigator tell it the way it is. Basically, he doesn't care.
My office is out of Charleston, okay? I don't work around Hampton, and I know that the Murdochs are highfalutin around Hampton, and, you know, some people say have a lot of power or whatever, but that name doesn't mean anything to me.
So needless to say, this case is getting very interesting, and it seems like a powerful family's use of their power and influence may be coming to an end, but still no updates on who may be responsible for the death of Maggie or Paul Murdoch. We'll keep you informed of any new information as it becomes available. Next on the docket, the South Dakota Attorney General is trying to create some reasonable doubt. Jason Roundsburg, that's the way he pronounces it. It looks like more Ravensburg, but Roundsburg is the way he pronounces it. Well, he was the attorney general, and he was accused and been charged of several misdemeanor counts regarding the death of Joe Beaver. Now, as you may recall, Mr. Beaver was walking down the side of a highway. It was dark, and Roundsburg, who apparently was coming from a political function, hit Mr. Beaver. Mr. Roundsburg had his chief of staff come pick him up. The police officer on the scene let him borrow his own personal car so that the attorney general could make it home safely. Whereupon the following morning, the chief of staff, the attorney general, discover and say, oh my goodness, there's a body down here. Well, the attorney general talked, gave several interviews. We've brought all those interviews to you. We can try to put a link below as well if you want to see the attorney general. That's the word I'm looking for. Trying to be cooperative, yet supply no information whatsoever, other than he didn't see Mr. Beaver and only thought that it was maybe an animal that he had hit. Well, now Roundsburg, via his attorneys, are stating that Mr. Beaver must have thrown himself into the attorney general's car and committed suicide. Now, how would the attorneys be able to try and do such a thing? Well, they're trying to say that a cousin of Mr. Beaver, a guy by the name of Mr. Barnabas Nimick, he told law enforcement, quote, I believe with a high degree of confidence, Joe committed suicide by throwing himself into the path of a speeding car. Apparently, Mr. Beaver was an admitted alcoholic with a brooding depressive streak unparalleled by anyone Mr. Nimick had ever seen. Now, why would that not be admissible? Well, there's no personal knowledge. That is speculation. The judge should not allow that in whatsoever. But the attorneys for the attorney general are saying, Judge, based upon this information and the fact that we found some medication on Mr. Beaver at the time or near his person when he was killed by the car, we want you to allow us to get his medical records so that we can see if he had suicidal ideations and would throw himself into a moving car on a highway late at night because he was suicidal. We'll see what the court is going to do. I think that those requests will be denied because, well, frankly, that information that the cousin provided is speculation. Now, who should really be offended by this? Well, I assure you, as a defense attorney, the defense attorney is doing his job. He's doing what he can. But the attorney general, the top law enforcement officer in the state of South Dakota, he, through his deputies, would be outraged that someone would try to breach the doctor-patient privilege under such circumstances as this. I tell you, every district attorney would be outraged and appalled and would object up and down. It just shows, well, the attorney general's in a very tight spot here, and he's doing what he can. I don't blame the attorney, but the attorney general, you would think, oh no, I've fought against this my entire career. We can't do this. He's doing it. We'll see how the court rules. We'll see how the trial goes, which is scheduled to commence on August 26th. Now, most people would resign in a situation like this, but the attorney general has decided not to resign. And in fact, he is seeking renomination from the Republican Party in South Dakota to be the next attorney general. You would think he would have a little decency and resign his position and maybe leave politics for, I don't know, the remainder of his adult life. But no, he can't do that. Why? He's a career politician. He can't make it in the private sector. So he is going to try and stay in public service the rest of his days. Next on the docket, a maid tipped off the cops to maybe something big or maybe just a bunch of weirdness. So a housekeeper working at a hotel here in Denver, which just happens to be the home of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game this week, tipped off the Denver police to what she found in the room. And what she told police was she went into a room and there were some 16 long guns. Well, that could be a rifle. And she said that she thought that she had seen at least 1,000 rounds of ammunition and potential body armor. Now, the police thought that since this room was close to Coors Field and could be seen from the balcony of this particular location, that maybe these individuals that were arrested, and there were four of them, we'll get to their names in just a minute, they believed that there was going to be some sort of similar situation that they had in Las Vegas at the music festival. Specifically, that's when Stephen Paddock opened fire from his hotel room of the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, where he ultimately killed 60 people and injured 400. The four people that were arrested was a guy by the name of Richard Platt, Gabriel Rodriguez, Ricardo Rodriguez, and a woman by name I am not even going to try and pronounce, but is spelled K-A-N-O-E-L-E-H-U-A-S-E-R-I-K-A-W-A, Kanoleahua Sarakawa. That's as good as it's going to get, ladies and gentlemen. They were arrested for investigation of possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute. Now, the mayor and the police chief and the manager of safety all came out and said, everything's safe, everything's fine. We kind of think this was just a big old drug deal gone bad. Having represented many an individual who's been charged with drugs, they usually don't rent hotel rooms that go for some $800 per night, with a view to the, nor did they request a view to Coors Field. They usually also do not bring in 16 rifles for a drug deal. So I'm not buying the whole drug deal thing just yet, but we'll reserve judgment to see if anything comes of that. So maybe a maid saved a lot of people and the city of Denver a lot of anguish. That's a good thing. We'll give each and every one of them of the accused a presumption of innocence. We should note, however, that one of the individuals by the name of Richard Platt apparently was recently divorced, put on his Facebook page something to the effect that he was going out with something big. So you let me know. Maybe just a bunch of gun collectors getting together. Oh, that's right. I think most of them were all prohibited individuals and couldn't own firearms. So maybe they're just getting together to do some drugs and bring their drugs along, or maybe it was something more nefarious. Let me know in the comments what you think. We'll give them all the presumption of innocence. Next on the docket, Bill Cosby wants to sue the state of Pennsylvania for violating the verbal and undocumented non-prosecution agreement that used his testimony in a civil trial against him in criminal court. Now, I understand Mr. Cosby is upset that he spent nearly 3 years in prison for a case that shouldn't have been prosecuted. I cannot necessarily disagree on the rationale for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. However, I don't think Mr. Cosby is going to prevail on something like this. I understand he is venting and would like to have some money payment just to stick it to the state of Pennsylvania. I don't think it's going to happen. First of all, states have immunity. You have to get permission, basically, to sue the state under various circumstances, and they're limited. And in this particular case, remember, a court found probable cause. The trial court said that what they were doing was okay. The mid-level appellate court said it was okay. It wasn't until the matter got to the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania that they said, no, you couldn't do it. So I understand Mr. Cosby's frustration. He should probably just get back out there and start focusing on his comedy tour. And that way he can get back. Just show him who won there, Mr. Cosby. I can't imagine Bill Cosby's going to sell out a whole lot of tickets given what we know about Mr. Cosby today. He is hardly America's dad anymore. Next on the docket, it's that segment for the dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we get there, since it's Monday, we have to give you the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week. And here we have not one, but two dumb criminal contestants. That's right, Davion Gilray and Trakea Cohen. They are our dumb criminal contestants from the week. What did they do? That's right. These were the people that pulled out the firearm and pointed their guns at the manager at McDonald's because he has allegedly committed the heinous offense of making their fries too salty. That's right. Continuing with the "my food isn't correct, let me threaten to harm somebody" theme, Davion Gilroy and Trakea Cohen. What will they get? That's right, a Crime Talk mug. We should probably send them an order of, I don't know, some French fries, some Orida things they could put in the oven themselves. They can salt them themselves so they get the just right amount, but that's right, they're gonna get a mug. Just don't throw it at anybody if the food is not prepared to your satisfaction. They're both in custody, hopefully going to prison. So that's right. I don't think they'll have to worry about their food being too salty anytime soon. All right, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. I have not seen somebody this stupid in a long time, and I thought I had seen it all. Please meet Muhammad Kabir. All right, he's 34 years old, and he was pulled over the other day by the South Euclid Police Department. And worried, of course, that he did not have a valid driver's license. He had expired plates. And oh, by the way, the two-year-old child that was in the car with the mother didn't have a child safety seat. So this guy is Mr. Responsibility. Well, what does he do? In an effort to get out of the traffic ticket, thinking if the police were just a little busier with something more important, maybe they would move along. What did he do? That's right. He called 911 and said that a male had been shot on a street near Walmart, which was in the vicinity of where Mr. Kabir was located. Well, needless to say, it didn't take long for the police to figure out that there was no one there that had been shot. And given it was a serious report, they wanted to see where it came from. Ooh, guess what number it came back to? That's right, Mr. Muhammad Kabir. So when that phone was pinged and they knew it was him, not only is he going to have to deal with his traffic issues, because apparently that didn't go away, he is now also being arrested for making false alarms, i.e. making up fake reports to the police. Mr. Muhammad Kabir, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the week. All right. Maybe you could, if you win, maybe you could get the mug. You could sell it. You could use an Uber so you didn't have to drive. with no license, no insurance, no car seat. Hate to say it, but you are not exactly the epitome of responsibility. But as we say in the criminal defense world, God bless you. God bless you. We appreciate people like you, Mr. Kabir. You keep coming back. And past performance is indicative of future results. So, Mr. Kabir, I think this may just be the start of something big for you. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. I want to thank everyone again for all the nice birthday wishes. I appreciate that. Do not forget to watch us tomorrow night as we go live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. It'll be a good conversation. And all our Patreons, send in all your questions and we will answer them. Ask me anything. I'll answer your questions. That's all we have. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.